Hey there, boys and girls, moms and dad, and children of all ages. You got ships at sea, ships on the rocks, ships listening to us, and ships that don't know about us. But you never know where it's going to go, because this is Fish and Frank, broadcasting from the mighty, magnificent, I mean, just, this is WKDW Radio 97.5 FM, and you can go to kdwradio.com, broadcasting from the Bishop West Real Estate Mobile Tower. Yes, there it is. That's a new one for me. The Bishop West Real Estate Mobile Tower. All right. But anyway, we're in Northport, and Fish and Frank here. Robert in a chair across from me. RJ is missing in action. We're not sure what happened to him. We hope he wasn't swallowed by a tarpon. You should never know. I mean, it's RJ. Anything could happen. He's a skinny little fella. I mean, he could be just choop, right down the throat of a tarpon. Tarpon wouldn't even miss a gulp. You know?
No, probably not.
All right. Let's see. Morning, Robert. Afternoon, Robert. Something, Robert.
Something. Some kind of day.
What is it?
Some kind of day.
Yes, it is. Been an interesting week. The last couple of weeks, you and I have actually been on a boat a couple of times.
It's been kind of nice.
You ever notice people get into the fishing industry, whether they're selling tackle or, you know, they have a tackle company or they're working with a rod and reel company or a distributor, and their first thought is, boy, I can get in the fishing industry. I can go fishing all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be out there and I get to go fishing and, you know, get together with all these great fishermen and learn all this stuff. And then you find out the best way to guarantee you're almost never going to go fishing is get in the fishing industry.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, but that actually, I think the most common thing, we did a whole bunch of interviews with different people in the industry. And I think that was the number one thing from before they were in the industry until, you know, after they'd been in it a couple years is how little fishing they got to do. But you and I have been out a couple times. We went out, we tried night tarpon fishing, failed miserably.
Yeah, it was a little windy that night.
It was just too rough.
I mean, coming right out of the north, blowing right down that area, it was just two footers is rough at night.
Yeah, when you're out there at night and you've got a solid 2 foot seas, and my boat, the sides are very, very low on it. And it's wonderful boat, but you don't want to be caught with, you know, taking waves from the stern on that one. So anyway, we failed miserably, but we went out with Captain Danny Latham yesterday. It was pretty awesome. I wasn't sure because we were going to Boca Raton Pass, so I was a little hesitant. Now, there was two good things about it. Robert was going, so I said, okay, Robert's going, I'm going to go see what happens. And we were with Danny Latham. Now, right. Captain Danny Latham is probably, I would say, in my top five natural-born fishermen, people who are born to do what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, definitely in the top five.
Yeah, there's a very, very few people who are actually born to be a charter boat captain. I mean, when they were little, they were lucky enough to understand what they were and who they were and actually go out to get it. And Danny Latham, he's a captain, Shaw Harbor. I don't know if he has a name for his charter business or not. I always think that's stupid. Call it by your name. You know, how many of these guys are out there and they say, okay, this is the name of my charter business?
Yeah.
And then you got to try and remember either their name, the charter name, whatever, but I don't remember any of that stuff. But then again, I barely remember that. I am Fish and Frank. I remember that. And we're on WKDW Radio.
Yep.
We're in Northport, Florida. See, I can remember all these things. Getting back to it, but
Why were you apprehensive about going to Boca Raton Pass?
The last time I was there, it was a nightmare. I'm sitting there drifting. And we're rigging some rods, we weren't even fishing yet, we were just drifting. And a guy coming up current to reset his, you know, get another drift going, and literally almost rams us because he just didn't feel like turning.
Right.
And when I was out there in my oil spill boat, I had a boat that I worked at the oil spill, and I had put 4x4s around the outside, had big bolts all the way through it because it was made to bash into barges.
Yeah.
And because when I would, we would be unloading boom and buoys and anchors and all this stuff, and I'd have to go up against the steel barge with a fiberglass boat. Well, I learned the second day this wasn't going to work, so I reinforced the outside of that boat to make it a battering ram. And I liked that one when I was in Boca Raton Pass before. Yeah. Because with all those big bolts sticking out and stuff, nobody got close to me.
Little Mad Max kind of thing going on.
That was it. I mean, okay, come on, let's play, boys. Go ahead, ram me. So anyway, and it was just nasty. But we got out there, and it was gorgeous day.
Oh, it was beautiful. The wind laid down. It was rough in the morning, but we went out in the afternoon, so we didn't have to deal with that.
As when we got there, it's nice, it's calm, and all of a sudden the fish, there's no fish showing anywhere. And we, for the first half hour we were there, nothing much was happening, but we hit right at the change of tide. The water was sitting pretty still and not much going on. And I think the most, you know, people talk about this style of fishing or that style of fishing. I think the most unfair advantage I've ever seen is some of these new depth finders. The scanners they've got now.
Those side scans and 3D imaging that they've got, it has completely changed fishing anywhere you go.
Literally, we're sitting out there, and Danny says, we're on the fish. And I'm like, well, how do you know? What do you see? And he shows me the screen on it. You can literally see the tarpon stacked up on the bottom, 20, 30, 40 feet deep, thick. I mean, and it's as obvious as the, you know, well, the nose on my face is more obvious than most. It's, you know, I've got that Bob Hope thing going on. And if you're old enough to remember that, congratulations, you made it this far. If you're not old enough to know that, ask your grandparents. Anyway, but sitting there looking at this, and it's amazing. And he says, okay, reel up, we're off the fish. I'm looking, and literally, all of a sudden, there's no fish. And then he goes back, idles around and goes, okay, we're back on them. Let's put the lines in. Now, years ago, we used heavy weights, and you'd have a 4 to 6 ounce lead weight wire wrapped onto the line, and then a bait would come be 4 to 5 feet away from that on a big old J-hook heavy. And when the fish hit, you'd hit the boat in gear, and as you took off, they called it a scratch start. And you would set the hooks with the boat.
Right.
And, you know, these big hooks, big leaders, big everything. So you made it. We thought you were swallowed by a tarpon.
No, I got a grand tour of all the stoplights in Northport.
A grand tour of all the stoplights?
Yeah, I got to see everyone and how they work.
Well, isn't that amazing? You get to go there, and you get reds, yellows, and greens.
Yep.
You feel like you're at a Rasta party.
And, of course, there's always somebody at the light that doesn't find the color they like.
RJ showed up embarrassingly late.
Embarrassingly late.
That's all right. But, okay, Robert and I went to Boca Raton Pass yesterday, and we were talking about years ago, we would go through, and you go up in the current, and the fish finders that we had on the boat then were flashers. There was a thing inside that would spin.
Yeah.
And you'd have one mark on that spinning thing that would show you the bottom. And then there'd be another like yellow, red was bottom, I think. And then yellow would show you like if there was fish there. And you would go way up. If the tide was coming in, you'd go way up into towards the Gulf. And then you would drift back. And hopefully when you saw those things spinning, you know, you get an idea of the depth, and it was red to the tip, green to the reel, and what that was the guys would thread inside the fishing line.
Yes,
they used Dacron.
Yep.
And what they would do is take different color thread and put it into the line so that you would know how deep it was. So you're going along, and the fish flasher's saying, okay, 45 feet, so red on the tip. And then all of a sudden, it'd go down to 75 feet. Let out the lines, green on the reel, green to the tip. And that would tell you how far down your bait was by where the colors of the thread were on the line. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, Robert's sitting there nodding his head. This is a radio show. We're nodding your head. We can't hear it rattle.
Okay.
So this was such a different style of fishing. Now, what was funny is Danny had done that with his new braided line.
Yeah.
And conventional reels for deep drop heavy weights.
Yes.
But yesterday we went with spinning rods, which is kind of different for Boca Grande Pass. There was
the normal situations, yeah.
It was almost 40 boats in the pass. Not many by old standards. There's only about 40. And I went around and literally counted them. I think there was 38 and give or take a few, probably 40. But we were almost freelining these baits out there. There were so few boats, you could actually freeline a bait.
Right. You could freeline it. The current was moving just at the right speed. And, you know, and the difference was, you know, like, let's go back just a couple of years ago rather than several years ago with the jig fishermen. They were the ones that did the hover drift, you know, where you were constantly bumping the motor in and out of gear to keep your baits vertical. Well, we were kind of doing the same thing. We were very slowly drifting along with the current, but yet still just bumping it in and out of gear just to keep that bait slowly sinking down into the column, because crabs are going to naturally want to swim down.
Right.
Unless they're really being flushed hard by a current, but in most situations when they're trying to make an escape, they actually want to swim downwards, just like pinfish do. They're not like white bait where they stay up in the water column or on the surface. They actually slowly swim down.
Well, the reason is they want to go hide in the weeds or the rocks so they don't get eaten.
Exactly. So he was maintaining that perfect drift to keep the lines just a little taunt, but just a little bit of slack so that crab could pull that line down and start swimming towards the bottom.
So what you're doing is you go out there, you figure out what direction the tide's going. You go up into the tide, and then you turn your boat around so the motor is facing up current and the nose of the boat is facing with the tide. Because as soon as you bump the motor in reverse, you know, it's going to swing that way anyway, so you might as well just get prepped for it. Now, in order to get these baits out there, they had little pinch-on weights. And the first thing that comes to your mind is split shots. But these are kind of like a hybrid between a split shot, a round one that you pinch on the line, the split shot weights, and the rubber core weights. They've got little ears at both ends that fold over the line, but they're elongated so that they don't... the round split shots create a different feel in the water.
Yeah. They catch a lot of that water movement, so it's kind of a hydrodynamics, I guess.
So we were using these pinch-on sinkers and putting it right above the hook. We're using a trocar hook.
Yeah, a trocar hook. It's made by Eagle Claw.
Eagle Claw trocar, and it's the 7-aught?
7-aught.
And what was...
6-aught, 7-aught, and 8-aught are the most popular sizes, but the 7-aught's kind of that happy right in the middle.
Now, is it the Lance offset or the non-offset?
The offset. The TK3 is the actual model number.
Okay, TK3...
TK3 is offset, TK4 is actually inline. That's when you'd be required to use on any of the reefs.
He did that for memory, boys and girls. I'm holding the packages, and he can't see, so, you know...
I was duly impressed.
Yeah, I was sitting there looking at him.
I was reading off the top, too. I said, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, very good, Robert. Okay, 60-pound fluorocarbon leader. Now, I like the high seas. If I'm going to go out there and fish them, I want the high seas. It's got a little different chemistry than most of them. A lot of different brands you can use out there. The high seas to me, now, like, for some reason or other, the high seas just, it's, I can still tie a knot on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yet it gives me that abrasion resistance.
Right.
And Danny was using about a 6-foot leader.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes a 6-foot leader for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, it keeps his hook farther away from his braided line, which is visible. You know, people think, oh, well, I go with the moss green because fish can't see it, and that's not true. Braid line's a solid object in the water no matter what color you paint it. So the idea is get your hook farther away from that leader material, or from your main line. But also, Danny is extremely... OCD, or actually I'll call it CDO, because he actually puts it in alphabetical order with keeping a fresh, the line as fresh as possible. If he just hooks a fish for a second, if he feels even the smallest little tiny nick in that line, he will cut it off and then retie immediately above that, because at that point that little bit of abrasion in the line is now no longer invisible.
Well, it's goes to the weak link in the chain. Well, if you've got a whole chain there and one chain is marred up, one link in the chain, mm-hmm. and let's say the chain is a 100-pound chain, and then you get a little nick in it, maybe that link got cut a quarter way through, 50% through, 75% through. You can't tell by feeling it.
No.
So is that spot now, instead of 60 pounds of pressure, is that spot now 20, 30, 40, 50? What's the strength left? You don't know once it's nicked.
Well, his other theory on it, too, is it kind of defeats the purpose of fluorocarbon. Fluorocarbon bends light. It's chemically treated. That's why it's harder than monofilament as far as texture goes. But he feels that that nick in the line or a little sandpaper marring on the line makes it more visible. So he's actually doing it to keep with the actual functionality of making it less visible to the fish. And he does that with his all of his stuff, whether he's inshore snook fishing or offshore grouper fishing playing around or doing a charter with tarpon. You know, he's constantly watching that fluorocarbon.
All right, RJ, what do you think? Scratches in the line, less visible, more visible, make a difference, not a difference?
Well, you know, you're in a water column with all these little things floating around. And I'll speak again as a diver. You know, as you're going down, especially in the pass, you know, there's all kinds of stuff being flushed through all the time. So there's all these little things. So a little nick on the line, I'm going to guess, would kind of fade in to all of that. But I'm going to agree with you. You make the slightest abrasion, especially on fluorocarbon, and that is a massive weak link. Now you might as well just put 20-pound monofilament on for a leader because you're going to get the same effect.
All right. But one thing you just said, I think, supports Robert's theory. He said all these little things floating through would blend in the background. So you're actually thinking that it would possibly create more of a visible spot, even if it's just a small one. Your way of thinking is, well, it'll probably just blend with all the other garbage going through. But that kind of does support Robert's point.
Right.
So I'm gonna give that one to Robert, and
I'll take honorable mention.
Yeah, you'll take honorable mention on that one.
I like it.
Because, you know, we are broadcasting from the Bishop West Real Estate Mobile Tower.
That's right.
You know, and we've got to be on the money here. All right. Let's see. Back in the Boca Grande Pass, we've got the line, and he's tying an FG knot. This has become the knot that's standardized for adjoining braid to fluorocarbon. Now, boys and girls, I don't use this knot ever, all right? But I'm not rigging up 6 feet a leader on a tarpon rod yet.
Right.
I will be next week, so now I got to go home and practice this. I got to go to YouTube, sit there with some braided line and some fluorocarbon leader and practice it. Because this is not a knot you want to tie on the boat unless you've done it 50 times at the house.
Yeah, it does take some practice. Some people say it's a simple knot, but you know what? It is literally not that simple.
No, it's tough. Yeah. That FG knot is really tough. Just go to FG knot, how to tie, and you'll find a dozen YouTube videos about it. It's probably the only good thing on the internet or YouTube that where the information is actually good. All right, so we've got 65-pound test braid on a spinning reel. Now, your best bets on the spinning reel is get something with a heavy drag because you're pulling, and it doesn't sound like much, but sometime fill a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket with water. If you got a scale like in, you know, bathroom scale, just put 13 pounds in it. You know, set the bucket on your bathroom scale, put water in it until it says 13 pounds. Tie it to your fishing line and pick it up with your rod. Let's see how you do with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you want 40 pounds of drag, you're not going to hold it. It's going to rip that rod right out of your hand. So about you want to set to about 8 pounds before you hook the fish. You want your drag set to about 8 pounds. Now, what that's going to do is give that fresh tarpon just enough so he can scream line out. So you can keep in contact with him and scream line. Now, once he's done with his initial burst or two, go over about a quarter turn more on the drag. Tighten down a little bit. And as you go through the fight, you're going to be tightening up. Or as Robert does it, just cup the spool. If you're holding the rod in your left hand, you're reeling, or your right hand, you're reeling with your left, just take your left hand and put your fingers against the spool a little bit. Now be prepared to let go, because you're acting as a brake. And if you just hold the spool, you're going to break the line. You've got to be able to release that pressure. Take your hand away. Let that fish pull line when he needs to before he breaks off. Yeah. Now,
I call it feathering the spool. I'm just lightly touching it, applying just a little bit more pressure to it if I need to.
He was feathering it yesterday with a 15-pound maul. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, I find that, you know, for me, it's just been you showed me it years ago. Danny showed me it years ago with trying to muscle some of these fish as we were trying to break them towards the end of the fight. And over the years, I've just kind of just gotten used to doing it and pushing it to the limit. And yes, I do break fish off. There's no question I do. But I've gotten pretty comfortable to do it on a regular basis, but you just got to be prepared to fail once in a while.
All right. So anyway, we're in there. We go up in the tide. The boat swings around. We're bumping it in. What we're doing is we've got a small blue crab on, probably about a little smaller than your palm would be. If it laid on your palm, it would fit inside of your palm. And with that 7-aught trocar hook, the TK3, 60-pound high seas, fluorocarbon leader with an FG knot up to 65-pound test braid. And using something like a Penn 6000 Clash, what's that, Spin Fisher, a 65, an 8, something like that. But I think a 6000 is fine. And what you want is something with a lot of drag pressure, like a Penn Slammer.
Yeah.
And setting it so you got about 8 pounds of drag. It's very simple. Put 8 pounds of weight on something, measure out 8 pounds, tie it to the end of your line, and try and pick it up. And when you take your rod, you've got it braced up against your hip, you lift it up, that 8 pounds should come off the floor, and if you kind of bounce the rod a little bit, it should just slip a tiny bit. But you should be able to hold it while you're holding the rod steady. That 8 pounds should not slip. As soon as you bounce the rod, that 8 pounds should drift to the floor. That's 8 pounds of pressure. That's where you want to start tarpon fishing. Now, we get out there, we swung the boat around, we got a drag set, everything's good. And what we were doing was actually casting up into the tide, throwing up current, and letting the water sweep the crabs down past the boat.
Yep.
Now, by using a number one or a number three pinch on weight, that actually was getting those crabs to drift down there, going a little deep. And what we started out with was a long cast up into the current, probably about a 40 to 50 foot cast, and then just letting that crab sweep until it got to the other side of us.
Yeah.
And now you can't do this if there's a lot of other boats around. You're not out there by yourself. If everybody pays attention to everybody else, this is fun. But if you're the only one in the world and this is your private fishing spot, stay out.
Yeah, yeah.
Go somewhere else. Because this is everybody gets to fish. So you cast up, your lines are going down. I hooked another angler. I felt really bad. I hooked somebody else's line. I had a little too much line out, wasn't paying attention, and snagged another line, was able to get it off. The guy was real nice. I apologized. But that was one thing. But you're going to have an accident every once in a while. Thing to do is say, hey, I'm really sorry. You know, mistakes happen. If you get mad and they get mad, you got a bad day going. So just suck it up, Buttercup. Say, hey, sorry. Anyway, so we go through. Danny hooks the fish. Boom. Hands me the rod. Or no, you took the rod, the first one.
Yep.
Robert had the first tarpon. Now, they're different in Boca Grande Pass.
Totally different fish compared to in the harbor or even up in the shallows along the beaches. Those fish really dump some line and really sound on you a lot. You know, they dive down deep into that water. And plus, we're in the early time of the year when the water's cool. They're full of a lot of energy getting ready to spawn. They've got a lot of tenacity to them right now.
Well, they're feeding up. They're loaded up. They're thinking about boy meets girl stuff. And let's face it, that puts a lot of energy. I don't care if it's a person, you know. Go to any club about, you know, 11 o'clock at night and see the energy in the young people.
Yeah.
Or the old people, for that matter. You know? And so, anyway, all excited, diving deep, and your fish comes up. boom, jumps up in the air. Robert's on the rod. He's got it braced up. And you're using the phallic symbol. I don't know. What's that thing that goes on the end of the rod?
Oh, the cushion.
The cushion. Okay.
Cushion. It's basically a...
yeah, well, we don't want to say that on the air.
It's made out of a Nerf material, and it's basically a gimbal that goes on the bottom of it that's rounded on the ends.
The thing really help?
Yeah, they're surprisingly comfortable. They're stupid as all heck looking, but actually do help.
Yeah. So anyway, the fish is coming up, and now what you got to do is you watch the angler and the guy operating the boat. And he's got that rod up, or she's got the rod up, and the rod is bent, showing you the direction of the fish. You want to keep the boat going at the fish. Don't let him get off to the side of the boat. If he gets off on a 90-degree angle of the boat, come right back underneath you, and the line's going to get cut on your outboard, or something sticking out of the bottom of the boat, one little barnacle, your line's cut. So you got to keep that fish out in front of the boat. Now, going along, following him, Robert's pulling on that fish, pulling on that fish. You're watching the line, and all of a sudden, you see the line going forward. As that line goes forward, out away from the boat, it looks like he's speeding up. And what's actually happening, as you're reeling, that fish is coming closer and closer to the surface. And you can literally watch the line, and all of a sudden, here he comes. And you can see just before that fish jumps, so you get the pictures. And how would you describe it?
Let's see. That would be the easiest way to watch it. You know, for me personally, I've found that it makes it easier on the person driving the boat while you're standing on the bow of the boat. I don't hold the rod straight out in front of me upward. I actually try to tilt it at, say, 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock off to the side of my shoulders, basically, with the rod pointed towards the line. So that way there's a little bit of an angle for the captain to see over my shoulders with which direction that line is going, whether he's swimming to the left, forward, or to the right. And I'm constantly trying to keep it out of the way of my body so there's a good visual on it. You know, okay. And you watch that line as it's come up. Like you said, it almost looks like that fish is running away from you because of the line, but you're not really hearing much drag going on. So that's a good way to say that your line looks like it's going away from me because it's coming up higher onto the surface. But if you don't hear the drag going, realistically, the majority of the time that's that fish starting to come up close to the surface,
right,
getting ready to jump.
That too. Years ago when I worked for Outdoor Life magazine, we did a number of articles on tarpon. And David Stahl was the photographer, National Geographic photographer. And he always got these spectacular pictures of tarpon coming up, flipping in the air. And, you know, it's all timing. It's only a couple of seconds. If you're off a second or two, you don't get the shot. And that's what David said he would do. He would watch the line. He wasn't watching the water. He was watching the line. And when the line did exactly like Frank describes, he'd have his camera ready to go because he knew that fish was coming up.
What it looks like is you're reeling in, but it looks like the fish is picking up speed because it looks like the line's going away from you much faster. Now, Robert did something spectacular. He's sitting there, and I was going to talk about it later, but I was on the rod, and I got my fish, and you could tell that fish was coming up. I'm reeling, cranking, and all of a sudden, here comes that fish up in the air. Robert snaps a picture, and he sees another start of a splash right next to it, snaps a picture, and my tarpon came up, and it jumped up, cleared the water beautifully. Robert gets this great shot and snaps another picture. And it was a spotted eagle ray jumping in response to the tarpon jumping.
Yeah.
And the eagle ray came straight up out of the water. Robert's got this excellent picture of it. And you don't want them anywhere around your boat because they can literally jump in your boat. And these are big. They're 5-6 foot across.
They've killed people before.
Yeah, they really can. They can a lot of damage.
Have.
Yeah.
There's several documented deaths in Florida from them leaping out of the water and taking people out.
Yeah, because you're going along with your boat at 30 miles an hour, and all of a sudden this 6-foot stingray comes up out of the water, and it's all kind of a white belly with a darker brown back and little white spots all over the top of it. Actually gorgeous. Here's the shot, RJ.
Wow, look at that. And they'll be holding it up to the microphone. So
yeah, everybody can see it. Yes, you got it right up by the microphone so you can see it. It's actually Robert got this awesome picture. But anyway, Robert's fish comes up. First jump, boom, no problem. Heads down in the water, and then does an almost immediate second jump. And what do you think went wrong? Why did that fish pop?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm going to say that maybe I didn't bow quick enough because I wasn't reacting to that, because normally you have an extra couple of seconds to react to that fish coming right to the surface. And especially in Boca Grande.
I saw you curtsy. What's the difference?
Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm some of that stuff's so natural to me, I don't know if I did it or not do it. But normally when they jump that first time, they usually go right under the water and make a little bit of a, actually usually another burst across the surface before they come up, or they just immediately sound on you. But that fish's splash probably still hadn't even finished when he did that second jump.
Yeah, and then the hook pulled on him. Just popped right out.
Through the hook. But that happens all the time anyway. That's why they always count the jumps and the lands of tarpon. You know, you never hear a guy say, we caught one tarpon today. They'll always say, we went 1 for 4. That means they put 4 fish in the air and 1 to the boat. You know, it's one of the few fish out there where they count hookups and lands.
Right. Yeah. So, anyway, Robert got on, lost his first tarpon. And then Danny, once again, he's doing something. What do you call it? Setback, drift back?
Yeah, I forget what he called it, but basically he was playing out the line just a little tiny bit at a time and feeling for that subtle hit, because he said the bite's going to be really, really subtle when they hit it.
So it was funny. My goal out there, because I hadn't done it in a long time, I know I can land a tarpon, and I did. It was, and the good thing about my fish was it was somewhere, let's say 70 pounds. Not a monster tarpon at all. It was wonderful. I was on the rod for about 15 minutes. But watching
that. I don't even think you broke a sweat.
What?
I don't even think you broke a sweat.
Not really. No, it was absolutely amazing. I loved it. So I'm watching the line come up. And because I'd felt the weight of the fish, and I was very comfortable with the weight, as that fish started coming up, I watched him. As soon as I saw his head come, I just took my right hand and put it as far forward as I can, extending my right arm shoulder, letting him have that slack. He hits the water. I pull the rod back and slowly lift the rod tip up, reeling, getting that line tight. And he did about 2-3 jumps for me, but I was using that technique of bowing or creating slack to him. That's why curtsy doesn't work. Just going straight down might help a little bit, but you really need to lean the rod forward, create some slack. Because if fish is heavy enough, if the line is tight, he does a jump. If you're pulling back on it and you're putting, let's say, 50 pounds of force to the fish, and you've got an 80-pound fish throwing his head the other way, combine those two, you've got over 100 pounds of pressure on that one little point where that hook went in and just takes it right out of the fish's mouth. Or he lands on the line, breaks the line. Because of the weight of the fish, when that line's tight, either they take it out of his mouth or break the line. So that's what creating that slack, bowing to the king, is all about. It's actually awesome. I got to take a little bit of a break and say Spanish mackerel, 3 to 15 miles offshore, a ton of mackerel. You're looking for no more than 40 feet of water or less, and a lot of Spanish, but a few good kings mixed in with them. Any little secrets on those Spanish, Robert?
Honestly, if you want the bigger Spanish, troll a little bit bigger spoon than normal. You know, some of these guys like the 0 or a 00 Clark spoon, I would bump it up to, like, say, a number 1 or even a number 2 spoon. Or if you're throwing a regular, you know, silver spoon, I'd go up from a half ounce to maybe bump it up to a 3/4 ounce. And some guys have been catching some 5 and 6 pound Spanish mackerel out there.
I've been hearing there's been monster Spanish mackerel out there in the near Gulf. A little bit up in the harbor. Most of the ones in the harbor are more your standard size mackerel. Mm-hmm. Still fun, but go back down to your smaller spoons. You might want to have one bigger bait out around Marker 5 or Cape Hayes, even up to the artificial reef off Alligator Creek, the concrete reef, possibly Marker 2 or Marker 1. But up in the harbor, in the deep holes, we've got pretty sporadic tarpon. You've got quite a few sharks up there right now.
Yeah, a lot of sharks are starting to move around of assorted sizes, which is really nice.
All right.
I think over the next couple of weeks, you'll see a lot more popping up in the upper harbor.
All right, coming back into Boca Raton Pass, I'm out there. We've got tarpon just boiling up. Looking on the bottom machine, we've got 20 feet of tarpon below us, and all of a sudden they start boiling up on the surface. Now, they've been doing that all day, But this was a little different. And if you remember Austin saying they got the happy roll, the angry thing, and then they got I'm going places roll. Well, this was kind of an in-betweener. We saw him start out towards the cut, which is kind of on the Boca Grande side, Boca Grande Pass, northeast or northwest corner. And they were kind of coming in. We could see them slowly. They were kind of moving, rolling one way and then the other. But the whole pack had come up more towards the surface, and they were actually coming in towards the middle of the pass, going towards the harbor side. Danny brings the boat up in between there, and I got see all these fish, and I've been watching them come, and I've got a free line crab on there, no weight on it. I've cast it way out. I'm letting it drift. I'm opening the bail, pulling out about 4 feet of line, closing the bail. Don't leave the bail open, because if you get a big fish on, there's no way to get that bail closed without possibly breaking the reel.
Yeah.
The line's going out too fast. So you want to open the bail, pull your rod tip, get a little bit of line out. Make sure you don't drop that rod tip fast. It can wrap the line around the tip of the rod, and then you get a fish on, you're screwed. So I open the bail, pull some line out, close the bail, lower the rod tip nicely, let the line drift away, and I'm doing this letting it drift away, and I'm just starting to reel up. Danny says, man, those fish are coming, don't worry. And he was backing, I didn't know, then he started backing the boat. So we got the baits right to it, I opened the bail, did another pull of line, the line fed away from the boat, opened the bail up one more time, did some line pulled away from the boat, and now I'm seeing that line move. And I'm going, I look at him, I said, I got one. He's like, you should be reeling. I said, not quite yet, because that fish had just taken it, and I needed to get that line a little bit tighter before I wanted to reel, just so he didn't quite understood what was going to happen. And then as soon as I saw that line almost tight, I started slowly reeling, catching up the slack, and then about 3 cranks into it, I felt the pressure of the fish, just started reeling, and went, oh my God, this thing's heavy. Rod goes right down to my hip level. I was up, had the tip of the rod up over my head, and all of a sudden, the whole rod and everything's down hip level. It's heading towards my knees, and I'm like, no. I'm reeling, holding pressure. The fish starts going. I'm like, Robert, guess what? Here's your fish. Hand the rod off, and Robert takes over. And I've got video of the destruction of Robert over the next 45 minutes.
Yeah.
The weird part about it is I was lucky. My fish was much smaller, and it jumped straight up out of the water, a lot of head shaking and thrashing, back down in the water, came up, did another nice, beautiful jump, and that expends a lot of energy on a tarpon. And Robert knew he was in trouble. I hand him the rod, and because my whole thing was I wanted to hook one. I wanted to actually be the one on the rod who hooked it. And I know I can land a fish. I just wanted to know I could hook one. So Robert's on the rod, and this fish, you could see he's coming up. And all he did was like a dolphin where he just kind of broached the surface and went right back in. Robert's like, oh, no, because that means he's not going to stop pulling. That's a fish that's mad, upset, and wants to fight. He doesn't want to jump and try and escape. He wants to fight.
Yeah, they stay sounded usually when they do that. If it's just a roll, that means that fish just wants to stay way down deep and really put a hurting on you. And it did that. It made me realize I'm old.
Yeah. 140 pounds of tarpon that did not jump, would not do anything except kind of breach the surface every once in a while. Just, I think he was trying to get a look at you and say, who is this guy?
Right.
That's. Yeah. I think that's all he was doing, was looking to see who the adversary was.
I'm wearing him down too. Yeah, he looks like, he doesn't look too well anymore. Let's keep doing this. Yeah, that's pretty much where it was at.
I think he thought he was getting the better of you there.
Well, a couple times I thought he was getting the better of me.
So, anyway.
It was pretty interesting.
Speaking of hard to pull, great to fight with Jack Crevel. When's the last time you caught a Jack, RJ?
It's been years.
We've got to do this, man. We got to get out.
Yep,
we're just sad here. You know what I mean?
We're talking about the radio station started 6 years ago. And it's right around the time I stopped fishing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You know, life gets in the way of our hobbies.
It does.
All right. Robert, what do you got to say about the Jacks? Because they're probably the next best pullers.
Yeah, I mean, they're still real pretty abundant in the canals of Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. But they're starting to show up out on the flats, the center of the harbor. There's been some really big schools of them in the lower part of the harbor from, say, Cape Hayes out through Boca. And then the handful of guys that have been out there trolling around for the Spanish and the Kings, especially around some of those wrecks, have been finding some really big ones, like 15, 20-pound jacks. So this year's kind of looking promising, finally, for the jacks, because there was quite a few years there where they were hard-pressed to find. And it's kind of a nice little spurt to find these fish of assorted, you know, 2 to 20-pound fish. I'll take them all day long. If they could teach them to jump, I don't think anyone would argue that they would be one of the greatest sport fish in the world.
I've always said, if you could teach a Jack Revelle to jump out of the water and do a backflip, you would not be allowed to harvest them. You would not be allowed to sell them, buy them, do anything. All you could do is catch and release them. That would be the number one game fish in the world the next week. Snook closed. They're out of season now.
Yep.
But they're filling in real good along the beaches.
Yep.
If you want to go out and play with a snook, first thing in the morning, about 2 feet of water along the Gulf beaches, try and get a little close to one of the passes, Gasparilla, Boca, Stump, and you're going to find some monster fish there. As the day progresses on, those big fish want it. They're going to get a little more timid, and they're not going to be wanting to cruise that 2 feet of water along the beach. But right as that sun's coming up, that's where they are. 2 feet of water, right along the beaches, big fish. Any good idea for them, Robert?
Small lures is going to be one of your better bets. You know, I would probably be throwing like a mirror lure Miradine, something that's going to stay suspended in the water column, or a small, soft plastic that I can hop real slowly along the bottom.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the old mirror lure TT18 or TT11. RJ, do any big snook fishing along the beaches before we got busy?
Yeah, no, that was my thing, was to walk the beach and catch snook and redfish.
What was your lure choice, buddy?
I've always liked the mirror lures. You know, and anything that I happen to have in a tackle box that looked like one. I've never caught a snook on something soft.
Really?
I don't know why that is. Maybe I just don't know how to work the soft lures properly. But, you know, a hard lure, I've always been very successful. And usually anything silver seems to work.
Well, you were doing along the beaches, and that's why. Silver's a magnificent color along the beaches. Does not do as well if you're back up on the west side of the harbor and Mica Cutoff. The water's too dark. It doesn't create a presence, but perfect along the beaches. So, number one right on the money. Red tide, boys and girls. Red tide is kind of like when you hear in the news, think of politics. It's agenda-driven, hyped up, and oh my God, the world's going to end. And right now, there are patches of red tide. But mostly the reason we have bad stories, and there's some bad red tide things down around Sanibel. But look where Sanibel comes out, and you've got Boca Grande Pass, and then you look back where Fort Myers Beach is back there. It's way inside. There's this big bulge in the state of Florida right there. So as the water comes from north to south, it gets there and kind of swirls around, and that really concentrates the small, tiny bits of red tide that we have. We have red tide, I would say, 70% of the year, maybe 80% of the year. But it's in very low background concentrations. It's kind of like the plants that create ragweed, pollen, where people get all the allergies, the hay fever, sinus problems. Those plants are there year-round. Mm-hmm. They don't go away. They don't just pop up, and all of a sudden, here, you know, they're horrible and then die away. Or just, what do? Just go away and then pop up during the snow? No.
Surprise.
They're there all year, same as the red tide. But when it blooms, when it produces the pollen or spores, that's when fish die, humans get uncomfortable and all that. But that there's background to low concentrations in Charlotte Harbor, I would say is more than half the year. And all the way along the Gulf Coast of Florida, you can find background to low concentrations at almost any point of the year. When you get into the medium to high concentrations, and some of that is due to that eddy swirling effect down there off Sanibel. It's an unfortunate thing, but what actually can make the fishing pretty spectacular in that area can also concentrate the red tide right there. Yep. So don't believe the news media when they said the world's ending, chickens are falling out of the sky, everybody's going to die. It's sensationalist media. They don't really understand anything about the world. Red tide comes, red tide goes.
We had Shelley Isaacson from Moat Marine here yesterday during the Giving Challenge, and that was one of the conversations we had. Moat Marine now has a map for Florida, and go to the Moat Marine website to find it, and they list where the red tide concentrations are, water temperature, wind direction, a whole bunch of cool stuff. And the reason they're doing it is just like Frank said, let's get rid of the media hype, let's get down to the science of it, of what's going on. And so I think that's going to be very helpful for the fishing community now is to having that resource remote.
Yeah.
And they're measuring now with drones. They're not using the satellite imagery anymore because that's usually a couple of days old. So they're running drones on a daily basis to because you can actually see the concentrations of red tide. So.
All right.
Pretty neat.
So, yeah, I've been hooked up to the state of Florida. They have a map with red, yellow, white dots on it from fishandfranks.com. If you go on to fishandfranks.com, weather and tides, I have a red tide button there. It'll take you right to that page. I think it's the same page. It's the one FWC uses. It might be a different page. Check Moat, check with FWC. I'll look when I get back, and I'll add that button to fishandfranks.com when we get back. So don't get freaked out about the red tide, but it is bad south of us. As you go north, it's pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, and the other thing is it moves with the wind, it moves with the tide. So if you're hearing of it, it doesn't mean that it's there right now. You could go there and see on the website that, hey, there's no concentrations of it, and then you get out to the beach that day and go, wow, there's red tide here. Well, right. It wasn't there a little while ago. It can move around, but literally don't be afraid of anything from north of Sanibel.
Yeah, north of Sanibel, you're pretty much okay. South Sanibel, you might have issues. All right, sharks. Tarpon means sharks. Tarpon are the number one food of sharks. So the number one favorite food. It's not the primary source of food, but it's their favorite food. Let's say it that way. Some big sharks caught recently.
Yeah, there's been a couple of big hammerheads caught, some pretty big bull sharks caught, even a few really good-sized lemons and black tips being caught.
Were telling me about somebody catching.
I'm getting there.
Okay, you're getting there. All right, I'm just waiting. It's
slow
like,
down.
All right,
the horse comes before the cart.
Could somebody call the Pony Express?
We were getting to the pony. You just had the express in front of the pony.
Okay.
One of our captains just called us on the way here, Mike Myers, and his long-lived dream has always been to try to catch a tiger shark, and he actually finally got one. His customers got one today, about a 7-footer. The coolest part is almost every tiger shark you hear about in the last several years is always at one of the nearshore or offshore reefs. He actually caught this one inside.
In the harbor?
In the harbor.
How far up in the harbor?
Lower harbor. Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, out in that area, his usual areas.
Because I used to see a lot of tiger sharks in Boca Grande Pass.
Right.
When I was doing the tarpon charters all the time and even some of the shark charters, out by the old oil docks, it was not uncommon to see big tiger sharks hanging out in front of the oil docks.
Right.
I don't know why, but that was their place they hung out.
The tigers and hammers always have loved that spot.
So,
but he actually caught this one just inside, so that's pretty cool. You very rarely hear that anymore.
Yeah, that's actually kind of amazing to find a 7-foot tiger up in front of Bull Bay Turtle Bay.
Yeah.
That's if we can believe him.
Well, he's got pictures supposedly coming, so.
All right, I'm going to look at the background.
Okay.
All right. Hammerheads out there. Seen some amazing hammerheads recently. A lot of bull sharks. What's going on for the average person? Any sharks up in Lemon Bay or in the Upper Harbor, Myakka area?
Not too much in the upper part. They're starting to. It's going to get better, but it's just at the beginning of that stage. So basically, most of your better concentration is from Cape Hayes out through the entire intercoastal. And a lot of big black nose, some Atlantic sharp nose. Been a handful of pretty good-sized black tips, like 5-footers you know, 80, 90 pounders.
Really?
Yeah. And then going on up into Lemon Bay, it's the same thing. You're getting some better concentrations of some bonnet heads, the Atlantic sharp nose and black nose. And I'll tell you what, people can kind of make fun of some of these smaller sharks, but, you know, we were talking about it yesterday. Years ago, it was always black tips in the harbor. You know, we saw our first black nose shark caught about 15 years ago inside the harbor, and it was the first one the biologists at the time had ever seen inside the harbor. Nowadays, it's a big flip, but black nose pound for pound, I think, are probably one of our toughest sharks we have here. I mean, they're amazing. I mean, the record on a black nose is only like 41 pounds. It's not a giant shark.
All right,
shark.
Now you're going to have to describe toughest. To me, I like the Atlantic sharp nose or black tips. Black tips and Atlantic sharp nose have bigger shoulders. The first way I look to see if it's a black nose is if it's more the same thickness from head to tail, without the big shoulders, Atlantic sharp nose or a black tip, from the dorsal fin forward is a much thicker shark. And I think it gives them more power.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I've never paid attention to it that close. You know,
That's how I do species ID on a black nose, is because they're more symmetrical from the head. You don't have that big shoulders on them coming down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're a little bit more slender-shaped, I guess. You know, I'm just going to look under their nose and see if it's got a little bit of a light smudge there.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way. But, I mean, you take a 3.5-foot black tip, sharp nose, or a black nose, and you hook up to each one of those, I'll bet you that black nose will give every one of them a very good run for their money, if not
more. Yeah, tight tail to tail, except the black nose would have the advantage, because he's going to run in a damn circle.
Yeah, that is normal.
You know, if you've got a black nose on, like say you're grouper fishing, you catch a little shark out there, you're wondering what it is. Well, as you're bringing them up, if you've got to go around and around and around the boat to try and land that shark, that's definitely a black nose.
Yeah, that was normal. Yeah. You know, I just think they're a very underrated, powerful shark.
I don't
shark.
See them do that quite as much in the harbor.
No, and I think it might just because of the shallower water.
Yeah, that could be. All right, now, RJ, you a shark guy?
I love fishing for shark, yeah. I used to love diving with sharks, too.
Diving with sharks?
Oh, yeah. That was the big trip to go down to Bermuda and go to the wrecks, and you'd see every kind of shark they could possibly see.
Now, I would let... No. Robert's looking at this going, okay...
I'll just watch Jacques Cousteau. That's all. Robert
won't get in the water over his ankles anymore. No. He's had too many close encounters.
I won't go swimming unless I'm on the same level that the shark is at, which means I can breathe and swim underwater.
So. Now, is it you're supposed to go vertical or horizontal with a shark to keep him from attacking?
Well, I don't know if any of that holds true. I think that you have to watch the shark's body language. You know, when their mouth is open and their fins are out straight to the side, you got an aggressive shark, and it's time to arm the bang stick.
Okay. All right. Redfish, still a little slow around the harbor. Not a lot going on with the redfish. If you can find them, it's amazing. But little bits around Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, scattered ones and twos. Going up the west side, you've got ones, twos, concentrations. A little bit better around the mouths of some of the creeks. Up in the Mica Cutoff, we've had a couple of good schools of redfish up there. A little bit along the east side, but man, they're hard to find. You got to go way back into the back. And if you're getting down snook fishing, there's pretty much snook all along the beaches. It's your best bet. A little bit more in the mouths of the canals right now. But... let's say, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, our producer, buddy, pal, RJ over here, and we are broadcasting from the mighty, magnificent WKDW 97.5 FM, and you can go to kdwradio.com, click the Donate Now button, keep everything going, broadcasting from the Bishop West Real Estate Mobile Tower, and I believe we're almost out of time. Oh, I got 30 seconds to kill?
What can Fred say in 30 seconds?
Okay, give me the top two fish this week, Robert.
Tarpon and small sharks, lower harbor.
RJ, top fish of the week?
I'm going to go with Robert because he knows way better than me.
All right. I'm going to go out, have some fun. Watch the wind. 2 to 4 o'clock. Sea breeze. Gets nasty out there. Before 2, after 4, to do a lot of moving around. Then that's your best bet. I guess, are we still here or are we gone? Okay, we're good. See you next time, boys and girls. Bye-bye.